This is Bird Request Part 2.
It's time for your Sunrise Guys, Dirt and Sprague.
First we get the bard out.
Andy Dirt Johnson.
That's the American Woodcock.
Brandon Sprague.
Then the American Crow.
Dirt and Sprague on the Fan Sports Network.
Keep up the request, guys.
Hey, welcome back in. Hour number three, Dirt and Sprague here, Portland Sports Leader, 105.1 FM, The Fan, 1080 AM, The Odyssey app, live on YouTube. Good morning, everybody. Hope your Tuesdays are off to a good start. We got the mail sack coming up 1 hour from now. Get your questions in, 503-864-6326. And sports, non-sports, whatever you want to know about, we'll answer them coming up 1 hour
from now.
Got a lot more coaches' audio to roll through here in this hour, including everybody else playing in the Northwest this weekend. But we are very excited to bring on a good friend of the program, the man behind the SP Plus model at ESPN, ESPN National College Football writer, Bill Connolly. You can go give him a follow on Twitter at ESPN_BillC. Bill, good morning to you. I want to start with something you just tweeted, and I find it an interesting argument that, you know, I look at the slate this weekend and I'm like, man, there's only one ranked matchup. I think it's on Monday, if I'm not wrong. Ole Miss and Louisville. So you get some other intriguing games, but it's not a real firework-filled opening weekend of the college football season. And Bill Connolly, you like that. You like to kind of discover who teams are. Explain your case here of no good games or no big games is a good thing.
Well, first of all, week one, like big week one games stink a lot of the time. That's certainly, there's a lot of surprises, obviously. There's a lot of sloppiness or whatever. So, you know, if we're going to get like Ohio State, Texas last year, it was a terrible game. Like it was important and intense and all that stuff. It also wasn't very fun to watch at all. So give them a warm up, especially Texas will have to try at least a little bit against Texas State. And I guarantee that game will be better or at least more well played in week two. So that's part of it. Also, we're living quad box life now, and I just want four games on my screen all Thursday, all Friday, and then all Saturday. And so, the big games distract us from the fact that I'm trying to get little partial answers from a million different teams. So I'm good. We're just excited to have it back, and then the big games can start the next week.
Well, let's play the game. Grade that game. Ooh. Week one with Bill Connolly. Let's start with one game we talked about before you hopped on. Oregon State, new coach, new staff, new players going on the road against a good Big 12 team in Houston. It's a 20.5 point spread. That doesn't have to matter for you. Grade that game.
I'm going to say a B. Like I think Houston probably pulls away eventually, but Oregon State has a lot of unknown to offer. They got some really nice aggressive defensive pieces. I don't know what they have on offense at all, but they have at least two or three guys who should be able to disrupt. Houston's offensive line should be really good, but it's going to be pretty new. Like some pretty big time transfers came in, so there's kind of a chance for some weirdness early on. I think Houston's too good, but we'll see.
Okay, I got another game. This is actually my game of the weekend.
Oh, your game of the weekend.
Monday, Sunday, Saturday, Thursday. I don't know if there's a game to, you know, whenever all the games are. This is my game of the week, and grade that game. UCLA at Cal.
Yeah, that one's going to be, that one's a solid A right there. Because, I mean, first of all, I have a ton of questions about both, but also, like, that's almost a dead-on 50-50 projection, too. If you look at the line or SP Plus or whatever, this one, there's always a chance for some surprises and a blowout or whatever, but this one should be really, really close and really, really fun.
Okay, I got two more. Let's do the Apple Cup. Grade that game. Washington State against Washington.
I struggle with this one. I mean, you know, Washington State showed they could handle coaching change and big turnover last year, but doing it again feels like this one might take a little while to figure out. And I think Washington is experienced enough to hit the ground running. So I'm thinking this one's more like I'm happy they're playing, so I'm going to give them a point, like a bonus for that. But yeah, we're talking CC minus here, I think.
I think you want to go D, but you're being nice publicly. Boise State at Oregon. This was a good game 2 years ago. Yes. Grade that game this year.
I hope A. I think Oregon's going to be too good for it to be an A, though. So this will be another like a B right here where maybe we'll get some answers. Oregon has some questions that will get answered, and eventually they pull away.
Okay, we're talking with Bill Connolly. Give him a follow on Twitter at ESPN underscore Bill C, ESPN college football writer, SP Plus model. When you look at, like, my team is included in this in Oregon, you just mentioned them, they're taking on Boise State. I think the unique thing is a lot of weekends in college football throughout the year, usually when we say, it's a bit of a dud weekend, there ends up being like two or three games that nobody sees coming and somebody gets upset, and it's like, well, we shouldn't have poo-pooed it. This is kind of tough because, again, we don't know what any of these teams are going to look like. But when you look up and down, there's not a lot of candidates that jump out to me, like excluding the Louisville Ole Miss game because that's a ranked matchup. Of just where are there any upsets out there that you see or any teams that you're kind of circling and saying, just kind of tread carefully on that one? What's your sense of the shock factor that we could get in week one?
Well, I mean, this is where I always just lean on odds. Like, if you have nine games with 90% win probabilities, you're still going to get an upset in there. So, like, somebody's going to, on average, you're going to get an upset. It is hard to just kind of look at the schedule and see something that jumps out outside of, like, the, you know, UCLA, Cal and whatnot. I mean, like, we didn't really see enough from Stanford to think Miami's going to struggle for four quarters there. Like, I mean, they'll test the secondary. That Stanford passing game actually looked pretty good, but we'll see. Wisconsin, Notre Dame. Wisconsin's got some unknowns and a fun quarterback, but I can't talk myself into any of that. I'm just leaning on odds say somebody big will fall, and don't ask me who that is.
Does a coach with no national championship win his first national championship this season?
Well, I think, you know, since two of my top three favorites fit that bill, I've really been gravitating towards either Ohio State, Oregon, or Notre Dame, which is not, you know, some brave pick at all. But two of those three would be winning their first, so I think the odds are pretty good. Mm.
If you're an Oregon fan and you're picking Oregon to maybe win the national championship, what are the things that Bill Connolly is curious to see? Because Boise State's not the stiffest, you know, it's not a top five matchup in the country, but they got a great shot at being the G6 candidate in the college football playoff and winning the Pac-12. And we know they've been a thorn in the side for Oregon a long time. So what's a thing or two that you're looking for from Oregon to maybe, hey, this is a question and I'm not going to fully answer it, but maybe it alleviates some of the concern?
Well, the last 2 years in the playoff, I mean, their offensive lines have gotten blown up. And Boise State, maybe the biggest strength they have to offer is the defensive line. They have Virgin Morgan back and pretty good depth there as a whole, especially for a G6 team. So they got size and depth and experience. And, you know, Oregon has, three new offensive line starters, something of that effect. So we are going to learn about that. I assume that the Oregon skill core is going to be too good for that to matter in the end. But yeah, we'll be able to tell if there's some negative rushes or a little more pressure on Dante Moore than we expected. That is kind of the data point that we'll be able to use moving forward.
How do you evaluate a team like Oregon that clearly has the talent? They've done it in the regular season. They've beat good teams. They largely, like 99.9% of the time, they don't lose to the team that they shouldn't lose to, but the way their season ends, like, how does Bill Connolly sum up the last two ends of seasons for Oregon versus going into this year evaluating? And some people in the college football world and landscape will be like, well, Dan Lanning, he chokes in the big game. And I'm like, well, he won two playoff games last year. And he's gone undefeated and won the Big Ten. But okay, how do you put into words what you make of Dan Lanning, the way their seasons end versus how you view him this year?
Yeah, I mean, that's always the thing about can't win the big game is when you win big games, you get a bigger game. And if you lose that one, you still can't win the big game. It's a fun little trick that we play. It is hard because if you've only lost, like, it's been almost 4 years since they lost a team that didn't go to the national title game. It's been almost 3 years since they lost to a team that didn't win the national title. And when that's the case, that means you're really close. You're way, way, way up there. And the fact that both of those losses in the playoff were blowouts does kind of confuse the picture a little bit. And like I said, I mean, in both of those games, the pressure was not stopped. The offensive line got blown up. Even if they didn't get blown up by the same team in the regular season, they got blown up in the playoff. And it's just hard to figure out exactly what that means. So I'm just leaning on the fact that they've been a top five team for 3 years now. They only lose to champs. That probably means you're in a good position to eventually become the champ yourself.
Yeah, Bill Connolly, our guest, ESPN college football writer at ESPN underscore Bill C on Twitter, SP Plus model. When you look around the landscape of the sport, I know that you had, at least I read, if I'm not wrong, you had Hawaii as the G6 rep, and it's always hard because you get one game in and you kind of, people draw conclusions and we don't really give the room to improve there. How deep is that race for you at the G6 level? And where does, I guess, Boise fit in? And what do they need to do this weekend in order to maybe not get bounced too far down the list of candidates there?
Yeah, the Hawaii pick was me being sarcastic and just saying this committee only looks at teams that play at least a couple of power conference teams. Everybody else is automatically eliminated. So that was me. I thought Hawaii could be pretty good this year, but that wasn't totally serious. No, I think a week ago, I would have said the race starts with Boise. Now, maybe it starts with Boise and Memphis, which, by the way, we get a nice head-to-head. I don't know who scheduled Memphis's schedule this year, but that was like they were a little too much there going at UNLV and at Boise State.
Right.
But, that's going to be a really nice head-to-head. But, yeah, it's a really deep race when you consider – even if it shouldn't be, but when you consider the way the committee overvalues games against power conference teams that you scheduled like 6 years ago, and just the fact that a 12-1 team, a weaker 12-1 team against a really, really good 10-3 team or something, they're probably going with the 12-1 team. But from a race perspective, that means fun things. North Dakota State looked like a potential playoff team the other night or the other afternoon against what should be a pretty decent Jacksonville State team. And so I can talk myself into at least 6, 8, 10 teams having a really good chance. New Mexico, we'll see about their new quarterback since their starter's out, and that might hurt them a little bit. But there are a lot of teams who are heading into this season, especially in the American, when you had rosters absolutely raided, but then those teams also brought in a lot of pretty athletic transfers. It could be pretty wild, I think.
There was a lot of chatter last year of who was going to win it, and I think Indiana was kind of lying in the weeds of, like, are they going to really do this again and be in contention in the playoff? And I think they came in at 20th. They go undefeated. Yeah. They win the national championship. Is there a team like that for you lying in the weeds that's almost generating no real conversation, or we're not considering them enough to win the national championship this season?
Well, I think just looking at my SP Plus rankings, I mean, starting at about Michigan at 14th, I think that's anybody after that, it'll be pretty surprising. But a team like Michigan, if Kyle Whittingham continues to be awesome Kyle Whittingham, even, you know, if he can connect with blue chippers and all that stuff, he's got a 5-star quarterback at his disposal and really good running backs and a really good defensive line and just a lot of things that both Whittingham and Michigan are used to having. Like, we're going to act like we weren't surprised if Michigan makes a run. And so that's one I'm kind of looking at. It's possible that the opposite happens too, and Underwood and Beck don't click as, you know, quarterback and offensive coordinator, everything falls apart, but there are pieces there. Otherwise, I mean, Indiana was Indiana for a reason. Where to talk yourself into somebody in that range, you're going to have to talk yourself into like John Summerall doing magic things in Florida, just things that don't sound like they're going to happen. And because, you know, those teams are projected in the 20s for a reason, I guess.
Yeah. Did you? I forget last year, Bill, like where Indiana was on the SP Plus going into the year.
It was right around 20th. I don't remember for sure. It was like 18 to 22, I think.
Interesting. On that note, Bill, like it's still to a certain extent breaking my brain. Now, part of that is like, you know, trying to figure out how Oregon has been so close for so long, and then here comes Indiana like a year and a half in, and they go undefeated and win a national championship. Like, sometimes life isn't fair. It is interesting of, does the old model still work in the sport? Like, we were talking about at the end of last week, the you know, blue chip ratio or composite ranking of rosters came out. I think 24/7 had it. And I was laughing out loud because Indiana was 12th in the Big Ten, not in the country, in the Big Ten. And I'm like, how is this possible? That is it one outlier? Does the old model of, you know, talent acquisition not matter as much anymore? Like, where do you come down on that debate? I know it's too small of a sample size and we only have one right now. Have they broken the model? Is it an outlier? How does Bill Connolly feel about that?
Well, I think, you know, if you want, it's all about odds, really. If you want to improve, if you want to give yourself the best possible odds, recruit a bunch of 4- and 5-star kids. It's probably going to work out well for you. But what I really enjoy about this very specific moment, I kind of hate the separation of resources between the power conferences and the G6 for sure, but also there are so many paths to creating a good team now. And that's really, really fun. Like, you can Oregon, Ohio State, Georgia, the teams that just recruit like crazy and have the best depth possible in a transfer portal era where the second stringers can leave. That's still, like, all three of those teams are ranked really high for a reason this year. But there are still, there's a pathway for surprises now. That's just a lot more fun. It was nice being able to say, like, you need this many blue chippers, here are the teams that can win, but it's also a lot more fun to be able to say, unless you nail this portal and you do this and this and this. So so a little more open landscape, but the odds still trend towards the blue chippers, I think.
Yeah. Might be a tough one to answer. Was there a portal addition that you loved, whether that be quarterback or another position, just somebody that went to the right team where you went, man, that could be the difference maker right there?
Well, I don't, like, in the spring, I put out a list of my favorite classes where I just kind of looked like roster to roster and realized, oh, I like a lot of these guys. And it was, Colorado, I think, could overachieve because I like a lot of the individual pieces they added, things like that. But if we're talking about the title contenders, I keep circling back to the fact that I like Indiana's transfer class way more this year than I did a year ago. Like, Josh Hoover's way more proven than Fernando Mendoza was, and that's not to say he's going to be better, but it just tells you that their ceiling's still really, really high, and they don't have to click on all that many guys to be right back in the mix again this year.
We had a small sampling of games in Week 0. Bigger takeaway from Ireland, was it TCU? What the hell happened there? Because that quarterback you're talking about, their head coach in the offseason said, he turned the ball over a lot, and I think they'd love to have him back after game one. Or North Carolina and Bill Belichick maybe for at least a 7-day period silencing the critics and showing that he can win a game.
Yeah, I ended up with a lot more questions about TCU than I did answers for North Carolina. But, that said, the goal in week zero, or really week one, if you play a real game that could be a toss-up, the goal is to, don't be the team that makes all the mistakes and get out of there alive, and that's what they did. They were able to play, they lost a couple of fumbles, I guess, but they still made far fewer mistakes, and they did just enough so that when TCU had a bunch of drive-killing penalties and snapped the ball over their punter's head and overthrew a guy in the end zone on fourth down, they were able to have done enough well that they were able to take the game. So I think that says they're they're going to be better this year. They're going to be a borderline bowl team this year, things like that. I'm not going to pretend they're going to be 10-2 or anything crazy. And among other things, a team in their own conference, Virginia, looked way better, shockingly good, shockingly dominant. So that maybe took a little bit off of the buzz, a little bit of the buzz off of that one as well.
I know the sport has its issues. They certainly are struggling with former NFL players, eligibility rules, money, transferring deadlines, expansion of playoff conversation. I totally understand all of that. This is also this is the best the sport's ever been. I mean, I get in my car sometimes and think about the show, and I'm like, it's crazy that it feels like there's legitimately 13 teams that I might be able to talk myself in, maybe more, that could win the title. Do you feel that way?
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. That's been the hardest thing. It's why I wrote that book last year, Forward Progress, because I was realizing that so much is changing and so much is going on. Some of it's awesome, and some of it is terrible or threatens to be terrible, and it's just kind of hard to get your mind right about all of it. And no, I think leaning on the positives, the simple fact that Indiana, which entered last season as the losingest program in the history of the sport, major program, was able to win a national title and get the Heisman winner, who became the number one pick, and all this stuff, that tells you so many things are possible. And it's going to be hilarious when a bunch of fan bases lose their mind when their team can't do it in Indiana.
All right.
So that's going to be a completely different part of the story. But it's just that alone tells you we're in a really, really interesting place. The eligibility stuff's annoying. I mean, my God, the SEC is not going to kick out LSU. What are we talking about right now? That's been just exhausting and stupid.
Yep.
But the game on the field, like I said, there are so many different ways to build good rosters now. And one of the things I picked up on in piecing together the rosters, even UMass has an experienced roster now. You know, just the way talent floats upward, you got a lot of teams that are full of grown men at the very least, and might be able to, with just the right alchemy and just the right quarterback play, might be able to do big things. I'm not going to say, I'm not predicting UMass to the playoffs, but they could still surprise, and I think it just kind of creates a lot of optimism heading into the year.
Yeah, you're 100% right on that. Imagine pitching a movie 3 years ago. Indiana's going to get this coach that's going to come in and talk crap about Ohio State and Michigan, and they're going to win a national champion. Nobody would have believed the story, and that was what delivered a year ago. Last one for you, Bill. We kind of do this every year when we look at the NFL. We're like, we know half of the playoff teams from the year before are going to fall out, and you're going to get a bunch of new teams, right? It's always what we kind of want to do, the chalk thing. All these teams will make it back again. College football's delivered that. I don't remember what the numbers are off the top of my head, but 30 straight years of a top 10 team or whatever it is who falls out of the top 25 at the end of the year. Where are the cracks in the foundation that maybe the candidates of that, like nobody had Penn State last year? Is there one or two teams that you kind of circle and go, if this goes wrong the wrong way, I could see them being the team this year that falls out of the top 25?
It was funny. Last year we had like seven top 10 teams with new starting quarterbacks, and we're thinking, oh man, this is going to be volatile and crazy. And then it was the three teams that brought their quarterbacks back that plummeted.
Right.
The short answer is we never know, obviously. Yeah. But just looking at the current top 10, I mean, number five Texas plays a ridiculous schedule and kind of traded, like got star power out of the portal, but traded quite a bit of depth for it. So their range of outcomes is pretty big, I think. Obviously, it could all work, but it's not going to be real hard for them to go 8-4 and fall either.
Yeah.
And then, you know, having Texas A&M and Ole Miss and Oklahoma 8-9-10, that kind of one of those teams is going 6-6 or 7-5. Maybe A&M's offensive line doesn't click at all. Maybe Ole Miss, maybe Chambliss gets hurt and suddenly we find out that Pete Golding isn't as good at the portal. Maybe the OU offense never comes around and they start to actually lose close games again, unlike last year. So I would say of those four, all SEC teams, I guess, two of those teams are probably the most likely. If it's forced to pick them, I would say, I guess, A&M and Ole Miss.
Yeah.
Look, we love talking sports, but sometimes we got to nail you down with an opinion before everything ages poorly. We do that all the time here. Oregon season ends how?
In the title game. I watched those, I was in the Peach Bowl. I saw their blowout loss up close, and I still think that's kind of that wasn't indicative of the whole picture, and I think they're as ready as anybody.
Yeah, great stuff. Bill Connolly, ESPN _ Bill Siegel. Give him a follow on Twitter, national college football writer for ESPN, the SP Plus model, and go check out his latest book, Forward Progress, that he mentioned there. A great read on the direction of college football. Bill, we always appreciate the time. Great to have Ball back, and let's do it again soon.
Sounds good.
There you go. Bill Connolly. Nobody's giving us a chance.
I didn't even ask him about Nottingham Forest.
Nobody's giving us a chance.
Didn't get to that football.
Yeah. Nobody's picking us this year, man.
Nobody's picking you, huh?
It's going to be a long year.
Getting to the title game.
Not good.
One of three of the teams that can win the title.
Jeez, oh, Pete.
Best team in the country, according to your opponent's coach. I mean, you know.
Get that rat poison out of here, all right? Let's talk about that, coach, shall we? Mm. A reaction to Bill Connolly. Spencer Danielson says this about the Oregon roster, and Dan Lanning says, hey, you're worried about me playing too many offensive linemen? I'm going to stuff you in a locker. We're going to play them all next on the Fam. All righty, welcome back in. 8:30 on a Tuesday morning. Don't forget, everybody.
Mail sack.
The mail sack is coming up at the top of the hour. We're in the middle of talking some college football. Do we agree with Bill Connolly's take that we like I don't know if watered down is the right word, but we like no big, you know, mega matchups in week one. So you kind of keep an eye on everybody, quad box your games, and not worry about somebody having a stinker or a clunker the opening week of the season.
We talked about this with Oregon State. You mentioned and referenced Oregon, who struggled against Idaho and then had their struggles against Boise the next week.
Yeah.
Some of these teams, good or mediocre or bad, they're coming out the gate a little rusty. It's one thing to go against your own defense in a controlled environment. It's another to have to go in a live game against, you know, another team that might be super hungry.
But maybe new coordinators, new faces.
I kind of push back on the entire premise of the idea that this weekend is like duddy.
Oh, not a duddy weekend?
I mean, is Ohio State, Texas playing? No,
they're playing Ball State.
But Wisconsin, Notre Dame.
Is that a good game?
Wisconsin is kind of in the, like, if they don't do something of note, they're probably firing their coach. Notre Dame's coming in with a lot of title expectation.
Yeah.
You can certainly say year one Kirby Moore. It's not the sexiest team in America, but it's a rivalry game week one. That's a very unique thing to get out the gate on a Sunday.
Yep.
I will continue to die on the hill that UCLA at Cal 7:30 Saturday night is the game of the weekend. You have Bob Chesney and 40-plus transfers coming into a program that just fired their athletic director.
5 days before the year starts.
Against Cal, who's returning a sophomore quarterback that started as a true freshman, played pretty damn well, and now they've brought in a new coach. Have you seen their ticket sale announcement?
No. Is it going? Is it booming?
That stadium should be packed at Berkeley. So, weirdly, Stanford can't get anybody. Cal, when decent or exciting.
Oh, Cal's always had a much better following, yeah.
I just think you look at the landscape. You have your duds. You have your Western Michigan against Michigan. There's no doubt about it. But let's see how Oregon looks. I think just seeing the local teams gets me excited to see what we're going to talk about this season. Oregon State's at 9 a.m. You don't have to give me every weekend Ohio State, Texas. And, oh, by the way, LSU, Clemson. Clemson's not a great team, but LSU has like 44 transfers, and I don't know what's going to happen with these NFL cats. So I push back as well. I'm with Bill Conley. I think the weekend is going to provide much better than what last weekend did, and I think we're going to get some underrated good games.
Look at Bummer Brandon turning that franchise around. I'm calling you a positive Patty over here.
I find the whole, like, we do this every year, and it's not week one.
No.
It's like a week five or something. We'll identify and go, there's no rank. There's no rank matchup. It's not a good weekend. And then we got like seven upsets, and we're like, holy crap, that was a great weekend.
Craziest weekend ever.
It's a bit ridiculous what we do, and I think the weekend's going to provide a good show.
Yeah. Well, I know my coach is on the lookout for rat poison. It is rat poison season. Bill Connolly just said Oregon's going to go to the national championship game. Mm. Dan Lanning was asked his thoughts about this answer, and it was a really funny response from him yesterday. He was like, I don't care.
What, the expectations?
Spencer Danielson said this about Dan Lanning's roster.
Playing arguably the best team in the country. I know they're ranked number two. I'm not smart enough to know how everybody ranks those things, but when I look at their roster, when I look how they've developed their team, I think they're the best team in the country, man. And hats off to Dan Lanning. I don't know him super well, but have a ton of respect for him. We've talked a couple times, have a ton of respect for him as a head coach, him as a defensive coach, and just what he's been able to do at Oregon over his time. I mean, hats off to him. I mean, it's very, very impressive how they've been able to win at a high level consistently. You look at who they are in all three phases. I mean, they have weapons at every face, right?
Quit blowing smoke up my butt, Spencer. All right,
best coach, best team
in
the country.
Get out of here, dude. Wow. Come on.
You hear him dropping a rat at the end?
Where's Mike Gundy when you need him? You know, they spent $40 million on that team. How are we supposed to compete? Come on, give my guy some red meat going into week one.
I think Dan will still be like, let's go whoop their ass. You don't think he's going to pull out 2 years ago that game where they almost lost?
Up or shut up.
There was a funny, Chris Hampton was doing an interview. His last one of fall camp was like last week or the week before. And somebody asked him, are you going to hold anything back against Boise? And he was like, dude, last time they were here, they nearly beat us. No, we're not holding anything back.
Let me ask you this. Yeah. So a takeaway from last weekend, we talked a little bit about the game and the kind of things around the game yesterday. I was listening to Joel Klatt because he was talking about, you know, he's been in LA since 2013. And he's like, I got to admit, I'm soft. If it's above 90, it's too hot. If it's below 60, it's way too cold.
People in LA are soft.
There's no doubt. And he is acknowledging that. So he's kind of defending the fans for not showing up. But in that sequence, he was talking about how it was no big deal. Like, oh, they were up 35-3. And yeah, they got kind of outplayed with their backups. And I just kind of wonder, in looking back at that, if Lincoln Riley would change that. Because I'm used to watching programs win these games by 50.
You kind of pull away and separate.
Like 56-3, now we're going backups. Not 35-3, which is still a sizable lead, and you know they're not going to win.
Part of it was probably they're playing on a short week because they play Friday night this week, so maybe that was part of the calculus.
Yeah, maybe that is the thinking, and Lincoln may have said that, and I didn't know it. But like, where are you at on that? Like, if Oregon gets out to what lead do you want to see starters pulled? That's kind of what I'm wondering.
It's an interesting question because last year they went – now it's a different – example, right? Because they played Montana State in game one. And so Boise State, it's a much stiffer challenge in Montana State. They went deep in their bag in the first half. Like, the game was out of hand, but usually you don't see that in the second quarter. Mm-hmm. And they were playing true freshmen all over the field.
So what is Boise State's the tougher test? And we acknowledge
no
they
doubt
are.
About it.
If it's 35-3, is it pull the ripcord? Because that
depends on, like, if it's 35-3 in the second quarter, which I don't think it will be. You're not pulling your starters in the second quarter of the game. But if it's 35-3, if you're up by 30 plus points in the third quarter, like, yeah, let's get everybody out of there.
And then are we coming in Monday? Our backups.
You know we will. We did it after JMU, dude. Our hair was on fire after that game.
My hair wasn't. Your hair wasn't. Man. I'm asking, are general fans going to be upset if they pull the starters and they win by, I don't know.
You play to the standard, Sprague. You play to the standard. No matter who is on the field,
all right,
there's a standard to uphold. We're not playing Boise this week. We're playing Oregon, damn it.
Sounds like don't pull the starters till it's 50-10 is what I'm hearing.
Here is Spencer Danielson on the toughest part of going against a team like Oregon.
Holistically, let's just talk about their fronts first and foremost. I mean, when I look at Oregon, that's the first thing that I think about. Dante Moore, elite, he'll be playing the NFL for a long time. Like, I can go, there's some receivers that we play in forever, some But when I look at their fronts, offensive line and defensive line, very impressive. Very impressed with not just, oh, look how big and physical they are, how they're coached. I mean, there's a mentality to how they play on their offensive line and defensive line that is a separator for them.
You know, it's interesting. We talked to Bill Connolly just a moment ago, and he highlighted Boise State and the experience and the depth that they have on their defensive line. Like, that's a fun little challenge for Oregon's offensive line right out of the gate because, you're not playing Portland State.
Yeah.
It's a team that if you don't show up and execute, as we saw 2 years ago, they can give you some trouble. And here's Dan Lanning on that idea. He loves starting against a team like Boise.
I think we want to put the best product on the field regardless of who we're playing, but certainly playing a great team like Boise State enhances that and knows, you can't walk into this game relaxing by any means, and I think that's great for us. This is a team that's very capable. And again, they've proven it time and time again. So I don't think it changes our prep or our mindset, but I think our players certainly recognize and our coaches recognize how talented and how well coached they are.
One of the other big questions we obviously have from Dan Lanning going into the season is his coordinators and how they've done in fall camp.
Yeah, I think part of being a great coach is also being like a lifelong learner. And I think we got two coaches, in those positions with a great support group. And they do a great job of learning through practice, right? We've had a ton of situations where they're calling it like it's a game throughout practice and they're learning from it. They're making notes. They're saying, hey, I could have done this better, or hey, I could have improved here. Or we talk through it as a staff when we watch film together and evaluate it. And I think they really attack that.
And last but not least, I think one of the things I'm most excited for kind of under the radar is the idea of like, who's going to debut? Like, who are the young guys that are going to play that we'll be talking about a week from now that maybe we didn't highlight too much going into the game because we weren't sure. And Dan Lanning is not releasing a depth chart because this is a CIA black site. And here is Dan Lanning on his freshman in the camp that they've had.
I'll say their growth has been really impressive, from this group. And I think a lot of that comes from the leadership on our team, guys, helping prep people for what to expect. And I anticipate similar to last year, we didn't necessarily know what that would look like. The guys were going to be able to help and impact, and I think that same thing could happen. I think somebody that might not impact this game on Saturday could be a guy that's impacting the game later on in the year. So excited about the growth of that group and feel like we have some really talented players in there.
He was also asked about the offensive line, and he is not shying away from the idea. They are going to play a chunk of guys. He said they feel good about probably the starting five, but he said a lot of guys are going to rotate in. And so one of the bigger questions, kind of to your point, whether it's a blowout or not, like how many bodies are we seeing this week? How deep are you going to go? They love touting having above-the-line players. They love coming out after the game and saying, of our 85 scholarship guys, 70 of them got in the game today and experienced some snaps and all that. One of the bigger questions I think early in the season is, which are the guys that have improved? Which are the guys that are young that have a chance to play impact football right away? And how deep are some of these position groups? Because as of now, we just don't know. We haven't seen
them play. There's a Friday night game that I would venture to say you should play one series and play entire backups and win the game by 60 points.
Hey, Portland State damn near pulled off an upset against a top 10 opponent last week, all right? Fighting UC Davis Aggies.
They blew a 21-0 lead.
They had them on the ropes.
Top 10 team in the FCS.
Yes.
Sorry, I thought you were talking about a top 10 team in the FBS.
No, FCS.
That's brutal to lose that game. Again, one series, then your backup quarterback and lineman should be in.
Who's the backup quarterback this year?
It's Raiola.
Sure about that?
Do you know?
I don't know. I'm just
Why
asking.
Why are you teasing?
Who was the backup quarterback last year?
Brock Thomas.
It was not Austin Novosad.
It was not Novosad.
And if I would have asked that question going into week one.
I don't think I knew who Brock Thomas was.
I had no idea.
Week one.
Can I give you a fun Austin Novosad fact, by the way?
Yeah.
He lost his job.
Did he?
Where did he transfer?
He transferred to go be another backup?
Hold on. What's the school? I just had this.
I love that you saw this.
He transferred to Bowling Green and didn't win the job.
That's one of the bad takes I've ever had. He was going to replace Dante.
He's the backup at Bowling Green. He lost the job to a D2 transfer by the name of Jay Castantine.
Probably took a pay cut, too, to go be the backup. Are you going to tell me Akili Smith Jr.?
I don't know. This is why it's just a fun question. Like, I'll be curious.
Is Brock Thomas still there?
He is still
It'd be
there.
Funny if it was Brock Thomas again.
Brock Thomas is still there. They've raved about Akili in camp. And then Raiola is obviously the biggest name of the bunch, but his landing has shown that doesn't prove anything.
I think long-time Duck fan has been around long enough to not completely dismiss the idea that Boise's going to come in ready to play.
Yeah, it's always been a tough game.
They have been a problem and a thorn in the side of Oregon for a while.
Yep.
That being said, I think this team is a little different than years past, although 2 years ago we didn't expect that one either, and they damn near won that game without that punt return.
Yeah.
I think overall, this is kind of the perfect game for Oregon because you're going to get tested, you're going to get pushed, you're going to get pressed. Your new positional group players are going to have to really be on and mind their P's and Q's and perform well because Lanning's not going to mess around in this one. This is a, we need to bury them, not go deep into the fourth quarter wondering, oh my God, are we going to lose at home to them? And Boise's coming in with, no, we're the group of six team. Memphis just won at UNLV. They're looking to do it. Boise's going to come in this with something to prove, and a close loss might as well be a win for them. So, in a way, this is the absolute perfect start to a season, because if you're not all the way ready and you play an Ohio State-type team, you end up losing. And now you're against the eight ball a little bit in playing the don't lose more than two game thing.
Right.
This is a absolutely test us, but enough talent to overcome, and ultimately we should run away with this at some point. And I like that. The Portland State games, no disrespect meant, I don't think they should exist.
How dare you?
That's just my two cents.
How dare you?
I think they serve no real purpose other than the week we don't play our starters so we don't get hurt. That's how I view those games.
Let's stick in the Northwest coming up next. By the way, Millsack at the top of the hour. Get your questions in 503-864-6326. Sports, non-sports, whatever you want. We got a pretty full sack today. Last call to send those in. Let's go to the state of Washington. They're playing a rivalry game. Hear from the coaches on the sides of that game coming up next on The Fam. We got the mail sack coming up 13 minutes from now. Before I get to some Apple Cup audio for you, that game is on Sunday. It's a standalone game. Can we also criticize whoever put the schedule together on Sunday? So you have no games in the morning.
Yeah.
The Washington State, Washington game starts at 1 o'clock.
Correctamundo.
And then Notre Dame, Wisconsin, and Louisville, Ole Miss are on at the same time.
Yeah.
Why did we not? One in the morning, one in the afternoon, one in prime time.
Well, don't we hate morning games?
I mean, I don't hate morning games.
About those, the
I don't
neuters?
Hate them. No, I hate big games being in the morning. I don't think Wisconsin Notre Dame is a big game.
Well, we disagree.
You think Wisconsin's going to be feisty this year?
It's at Lambeau Field, brother.
It is. You know what happened the last time they played there?
What happened last time is not indicative
relevant.
Of this one, is it?
You taking Wisconsin plus a 20 and a half?
I am.
Okay.
I
love that you're dying on this hill that Wisconsin's going to
whoever
be good.
The quarterback
Wisconsin. Who's their quarterback this year?
What does it matter? It
doesn't matter, exactly.
I'm not a Badger, but he's going to Lambeau leap his ass in there.
Look, we have the ability to watch two games at one time. I'm just like, why is one of those games not at like 10 a.m., one's at 12:30, and one's at 4? Like, why do we have two? There's three games the whole day, and two of them are on at the same time.
You can shame me for what I'm saying, and I'm okay with that, but I'm going to follow up and say the guy who chose to watch FCS football on Thursday is now shaming me for being excited for Wisconsin-Notre Dame at Lambeau Field.
I am.
Who are you?
Turning that around on you.
Who are you?
Did they do the draft correctly? And then we'll get to some audio.
Who is the quarterback of Wisconsin?
I don't know. I could tell you off the top of my head, to be honest with you.
I'll play the guessing game. I'll give you the quarterbacks, okay? I want you to play the guessing game.
Bill Connelly said they have an exciting new quarterback.
Okay. Is it? According to ESPN's depth chart. Well, it's just a listing, actually. Carter Smith.
Okay.
Danny O'Neill? Colton Joseph, Ryan Hopkins.
Ryan Hopkins.
I smoked weed
up.
With a Johnny Hopkins.
Ryan Hopkins sounds made up.
Or Deuce Adams.
Deuce Adams would be the sentimental poll. Deuce Adams would be a great starting quarterback. It's a hell of a name. Is it Danny O'Neill? Danny O'Neill's not there. Is he still playing college football?
He's on the ESPN list.
What was the other name you gave me? Colt something? Colt Mose?
Colton Joseph.
Let's go with him. Colton Joseph.
According to the Google search.
Yeah, is that the exciting quarterback Connelly's talking about?
It is Colton Joseph,
okay.
Who is an FCS transfer.
Okay. They're doing the same thing you guys are.
He, hold on.
Got the FCS QB. Bring him up.
Yeah,
sometimes they turn
Old
into Vernon
Dominion.
Adams.
He played at Old Dominion.
Oh, when Old Dominion comes to town, you throw the records out the window. Did they do the draft correctly? The reports are out, and Swag's had it in his update. Music to the ears, I'd imagine, for Oregon fan, that the Ohio State-Oregon game will not be a big noon kickoff. I would love and maybe somebody wrote this and I just haven't seen, like the behind the scenes of how this shakes out, like all the power brokers in a room drafting games like a fantasy draft for their television contract. So the way it works is Fox has the first three picks of their TV deal before CBS and NBC get a pick. Do we agree with their top three picks? Their top three picks were it's always Michigan, Ohio State pick number one.
Have to be
number one. Number two, they went Indiana hosting Ohio State.
Hard to say no to that one, dude. It's defending champs against the team that won it 2 years ago.
So that would be a big noon game in Bloomington. And then the third one is Michigan, Oklahoma. Oklahoma at Michigan. It's a Big Ten network, or not Big Ten network, but obviously a Big Ten
so
game.
So that'll
this
be
year.
A big nooner?
That is the big nooner
Those
of week
are the
week
three
two.
Big nooners.
Oklahoma Michigan next Saturday is the big nooner.
It's a fascinating decision. I would have personally leaned Oregon, Ohio State if I'm controlling the big nooner schedule that way.
I wonder if they wanted to just spread it out a little bit to have bigger games, because I think the Indiana, Ohio State, and the Oregon, Ohio State game are very close together on the calendar.
Well, also, you would have had three Ohio State games as your big nooner,
which they're the biggest draw in the conference.
I guess I kind of understand. Like, let's take our Big Ten team, and they're going to cross over against an SEC team.
Right. You know, two huge brands. I can't blame it.
In Ann Arbor, they beat them last year, and let's see if Kyle Whittingham can get them back.
That allowed Ohio State, Oregon to be the fourth overall pick in the draft, and CBS had the first pick this year ahead of NBC.
So who's on the call of that one?
That will
Did
be
Danielson
Brad,
retire.
It'll be the crew this weekend. Brad Nessler and Charles Davis is
oh,
the
Charles
new CBS.
Charles Davis took over for Danielson
and Jenny Dell. That's your CBS crew.
Okay, sounds like a good crew.
The fifth pick was USC at Penn State, which would be the wideout game. That was NBC had the fifth pick. So USC at Penn State will be the wideout game.
Yeah. Kind of need to see it from Penn State. You know what I mean?
Okay,
not really excited about Penn State. They were pretty terrible last year.
That they were, Bob. Let's go to the Apple Cup on Sunday. This is kind of fun. So the idea of playing the opening week of the season is like, what are we doing here? This used to be after Thanksgiving, and now we're playing, I don't know what the weather's going to be in Seattle, but I imagine warm this weekend. Here is Kirby Moore. He is the head coach of your Washington State Cougars, and he grew up around the rivalry and going to games and all that. Here he is on the opening weekend being the Apple Cup date.
The game is still played between the lines. It's about the players. It's a great opportunity, right? Playing it on Sunday, NBC, 1 p.m., no other game on in football. So from that standpoint, I think it's great. It still means a ton for both sides and for this state, and just really looking forward to our players going out there.
It is right. Unique. Like they, his press conference, rough watch. Doesn't mean anything about him as a head coach. I'm not sure there was an answer other than that one that was longer than 12 seconds.
The problem is you teed up that he grew up watching this rivalry and he completely doesn't acknowledge much.
It's between
the lines and the players.
71 degrees, mostly sunny in Seattle.
Okay, so weather won't be an issue there.
And I tell you, I weirdly, I had an odd, is how I describe it, text back and forth regarding soccer yesterday with 1P Harris.
Yeah.
And I think it kind of morphed me into rooting really hard for Washington this weekend.
Really?
I think it got me into the rivalry with
Oregon State, Washington State becoming a rivalry for you?
Yeah, based on the text conversation, it kind of morphed me into, okay.
I need some deets now. Let's see, is he barking up the you can't beat us tree? What are we doing here, Harris?
No, he did not do
he's
such a thing.
He's doing his peacock walk around the building? Is that what he's doing?
Well, I wasn't able to watch my EPL team this weekend for obvious reasons. It was a 4:30 kick. I'm running hood to coast.
Right.
So I just finally sat down and got to watch it. They played his team, Liverpool, and ended up being a great soccer match, ended in a draw, and I texted him, and he said he thought I was texting about the Timbers.
Oh.
And I said,
No. You guys are off to a rocky start.
And then
start
it got into
year.
Like a weird, like one team's been to the title three times in 11 years. The Blazers could never. And I was like, okay.
Where are we going with that?
It was a little contentious on the text. I'm like, you know what?
I think this rivalry's a brewing, man.
Soccer got me to want to care about the football rivalry a little bit.
He ruined your first game of the year. Told you the outcome of the game.
He did.
This was back-to-back weeks of controversial text from Patrick Harris.
I had to watch the first match on DVR, and he ruined the outcome by just texting brutal. And I'm like, well, damn, I know what that means.
Last one here on the Apple Cup, and then we'll go to the mail sack at the top of the hour. Washington, I believe by my account. Now, Jed Fish, credit to him and his visor. I will give him acknowledge him here. He is a believer in the depth chart. They released an actual depth chart going into the first game.
I look, you can defend any coach in the sport, whether it's your team's coach or another team's coach, all you want. And they're not wrong to follow up with the question. I just find it comically stupid that all these guys care so much as if this is state secrets.
You can't see it. You can't see it. You can't see who's on our two deep.
Why?
How dare you? How dare you?
What's going to happen if I know Tuioti starting on the defensive line for Oregon?
Is Mateo a one? I don't know. Could go either way. Who's the starting quarterback this week? Could go either way.
Is it the two names of the or? are you worried about the or?
Here is Jeff Fish. They have, I believe, five guys atop their depth chart. Husky fan, correct me if I'm wrong there. Five true freshmen atop their depth chart. Here is Jed on them playing a rivalry game in game one.
Yeah, I have more than three first-year players that are going to play. That's for sure, and potentially start. But I would say that the biggest thing for us is they have to understand It's still 53 1/3. It's still a 100-yard field. It's still what you grew up playing in high school and what you grew up playing your whole life. And
touch the grass, there, baby.
When you run out of that tunnel,
yeah,
and you look around, I think we have 68,000 seat tickets already out. We'll be sold out for the game.
We'll see.
And it's going to be 72 degrees and sunny, and it's going to be a jam-packed place. And those kids are going to have to take a deep breath. But John Mills did, and I would expect, you know, our guys to do the same. And when Dylan Robinson went out against Ohio State, he had to take a deep breath and go play. And so if Jaron Jones and Ramczyk and Cody and DCB and some of these other guys are going to be going out there, they're going to have to go out there and be able to take that deep breath and go play at the highest level.
One of their starting freshmen, his name is indeed Ramczyk. He's an edge rusher.
It's a great name.
His name is Ramczyk. I mean, look, I got to acknowledge, that's pretty badass.
We had more support for people naming their kids Fritz. It's out there. It's a real thing. It's not just a nickname.
It is very true. They exist.
You never know. Look, remember last year's game was quite interesting in Pullman. It started out pretty kind of back and forth, close-ish, and then a couple turnovers changed the circumstance, and Washington ended up running away with it and getting some payback for the year prior, running to the short side of the field. You know, I hope Washington State truly can keep this one close. I think it'd be great. It'd be really entertaining. I'm looking forward to the game. The Apple Cup's always been a fun rivalry. I'll be curious, man. A lot on Washington, because Washington State can at least lean on, well, it's a new coach. We're kind of restarting, you know, in a roundabout way. Let's see what we are. All of the stuff is on Washington. They're 20-plus point favorites.
Yeah.
There's going to be probably more Washington fans at this one than, you know, Cook fans. And they've got expectations with Damon Williams back. He was really awful against legitimate teams last year and really good against some of the lesser thans. Come out the gate and at least give some kind of confidence that maybe this is the year you step into the conversation of, can they be the fourth team in the Big Ten in the 10-2 conversation to maybe sneak into the playoff stuff or get close to it? I think they can set the tone maybe for their season if they come out the gate and don't struggle for most of the way.
Schedule's manageable for them, that's for sure. We have a decision by an organization we will talk about in the final hour. Do we agree with the call? We'll start, though, with the mail sack, as we always do on Tuesdays. Get your questions in, 503-864-6326. Final hour next on The Fam.